We're back. We got Mr. Weaver. He's going to be with me the whole night. And our first guest coming up online is Justice Zara. Justice Zara, many of you may not remember, but he was a circuit court judge down here in Wayne County. He went to the Court of Appeals and has been sitting up on the Supreme Court through several of the administrations here in our state, and one of the finest judges in our land. Always know where he's coming from. So it's a pleasure, a great pleasure. But before I first get into the topics of the day, gentlemen, Justice Zara, are you with us here?
I am, Todd.
Weaver?
I'm here, Todd. You undersold Justice Zara. He's probably one of the finest legal minds we've ever seen.
You stop it, Mike. I'm honored to be on a show with Todd and you and Perkins and the chief judge from Wayne County. So thank you for including me.
Well, I say I'm a string on the Goodyear blimp compared to you guys. So it's always a pleasure to be with you guys. But I have to ask this. Just it would pain me if I didn't. Is Scottie Scheffler not the epitome of gentleman and a hero in our sports world, for which we should have everybody, all young athletes, look at him to follow? Just what a great Masters and what a great winner.
You know, it's interesting. We had that a lot of hot mic issues at the Masters this year, but not anything from the champion. And he's a real pro for sure. It all the while, his wife's about to go into labor, and he holds it together. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah. Justice Zara, did you get a chance to – I know you're busy. Did you get a chance to watch any of the Masters?
I did. I watched the Sunday final round. Recorded it and watched a little bit later. Kept my ears away from everybody talking about it, so I watched the entire final round. It was an enjoyable day. I love the spring and the Masters. It's the beginning of the good weather here in Michigan, and yeah. Rite of passage.
Yeah, I hear you. So Mike and I know and realize this is going to be a busy next week or so, and then I just happened to pull up your schedule of all the cases you have. You are right now just preparing to hear a barrage of oral arguments. Is that right?
Correct. Tomorrow on Wednesday, we have, I think, 11 cases over those 2 days. And then next week, we are taking the court on the road, I believe to Cass County, to hear a case in front of several hundred high school students. We do it twice a year.
That's awesome.
So community connections.
How did that start? How did you get to get into it? I mean, I think it's... when I was in high school, I didn't get to watch a Supreme Court oral argument. I would have loved it. How did that get off the ground?
It was on up and running when I joined the court 14 years ago, Todd. I think it was a product of former Chief Justice Young wanting to get us out on the road and exposed to people. But I'm not exactly sure of the origins, but I'll tell you what, we do it twice a year, and it's one of the most rewarding things we do.
I got to imagine. And I can tell you probably have some indelible imprints on young minds when they get to see the lawyers and the justices going at it to make a mark on them to become lawyers themselves. So... that's stellar stuff.
I'll tell you what. We conduct the arguments. The local bench is there. Then after the arguments, the lawyers will take the podium, and our chief commissioner will moderate questions from the students. And it is inspiring to hear how well tuned in they are to the legal issues. And they present some great questions.
You know what's amazing to me? I am... With Heather and having Addie at home, who's a junior, I got to tell you, I don't know, maybe there's something in the water, but the youth the juniors, this the high school students, maybe they're just getting so much more information because of, you know, whatever, you know, the phone or the computer or whatever it is, the tablet they use. But they seem so much more knowledgeable than what I did when I was in high school back during the eons ago. I don't know. It wouldn't surprise me to hear that many of the students have, or most of them have, just, I don't know, they're in tune with what's going on and great questions and the stuff they read. I'm always blown away by Addison and what she asks and, you know, where her mind's at. So I don't know. I guess it comes with time. I can guarantee you Weaver was not thinking about what was in the law back in, you know, his day and age. He was trying to figure out how to stop the ball as a shortstop. So anyway,
Judge, do you have many people come to your open sessions at the Supreme Court when you're in session in Lansing? I mean, I think it'd be so enlightening for people to see, you know, sort of how the sausage is made, you know what I mean? But
sure.
It's so professional and so inspiring to watch it. So do you have many people come out?
Well, every term we have three or four cases that are the high publicity cases, and the courtroom is packed. And then we have to take a break after the argument so that, you know, we can let the courtroom empty. But over the balance of the term, every month that we have oral arguments, it would not be unusual for us to see one or two classrooms of kids work their way in, you know, watch a little bit of the arguments and then leave. And, of course, the litigants and their families are generally there to watch and observe the process.
Well, guys, we are coming up on a mandatory break here that I'm getting whistled in by my producer. But there are so many big topics that Justice Zara is taking on. And no sunshine here where it doesn't belong. You have always been working on doing something. And I want to get into all the great things that are going on at the Supreme Court that I promise you half the public, more than half the public, don't know about. So we'll be right back in about a minute. And I want to hear about those great activities that you're bringing forth for our state of Michigan through the Supreme Court. We'll be right back just after this. So we got two of the best, our staple, Mike Weaver from Plunkett Cooney, and the one and only Justice Brian Zara from our Michigan Supreme Court. Justice Zara, you have taken on so many different activities that many people don't have an idea about, and one of them, obviously, is Justice for All Commission. So if you could tell our listeners around the great state and the Midwest, what is a Justice for All Commission, and what's new and exciting as it relates to that?
Oh, thanks for asking, Todd. Yeah, you're correct. Most people think as a Supreme Court justice, we're just deciding cases, but we're also administratively running the courts of this state and dealing with many issues relating to the bar and the obligations of the legal profession, like the Michigan bar exam, the business courts. And I've been for 4 years now chair of the Michigan Justice for All Commission. We started it 4 years ago, and it is to fill the civil justice gap. I'm sure you and Mike, as well as I, all learned in law school that lawyers have an obligation to provide legal services to those who can't afford it. And we were all taught we should do pro bono work. And I did pro bono work when I was in practice. I very naively thought if we all do our pro bono work, we're filling the gap. But the fact of the matter is, once I became a judge and saw how many people come to court without representation, we're nowhere close to it. Take all the lawyers, if they did 50 hours of pro bono work, you wouldn't even get the top of the iceberg. Wow. And then we have Legal Services Corp, which for 50 years has been funded by the federal government to provide throughout the 50 states legal aid, but they cannot do enough to cover the gap. Last year, there was $580 million in funding for legal services. It's estimated they need more than four times that amount to really dig into this. So what we've done at the state level is say, well, we know with the deficit of the federal government, we simply just can't buy our way out of this problem. What can we as judges and lawyers do to fill this gap? Let's think outside the box. And the Justice for All Commission is doing innovative things. Of course, we'd love it for everybody to have a lawyer, but if you can't have a lawyer, what can we do to help educate you? In Michigan, we've always had Michigan Legal Help, one of the leading online services where people can go and learn their rights in various areas, whether it be landlord, tenant, debt collection, family law. It's a great resource. The Justice for All Commission has expanded the self-help centers throughout the state of Michigan, where people can go and get information about their areas of law, and people will be there to help them, or there's interactive kiosks with web-type information. Another thing we're doing is modifying the court forms. I can tell you, as a Supreme Court justice, there are some forms in the district court that I wouldn't even know how to fill out. and you know, in the district court, there are many people who go in without representation. So right. We're reviewing those forms to make them easy to understand and for people to be able to look at the form and know what goes in there. We've got a reimagining courthouse committee that is looking at making the courthouses friendlier and more welcoming. I don't know if you remember before you were a lawyer, the first time you went into court, I went for a traffic ticket. My heart was beating 1,000 beats a minute. I was stuttering. I felt very intimidated. We want to break that intimidation down and make it more welcoming. But I think the biggest reform that we're going to do with this Justice for All Commission, and right now we're putting together a pilot project, is some regulatory reform in our legal profession. And sometimes lawyers are concerned about this. But what I'm talking about doing is certifying people like paralegals or people with certain educations to go and help out those who need some advice in the law, but lawyers essentially have priced themselves out of it. So, for example, if you need help in landlord-tenant, it's almost cost prohibitive to hire a lawyer. If you can't pay your rent, how are you going to hire a lawyer? So we're talking about certifying people who can help in landlord-tenant or debt collection or family law or some probate cases. And then we're going to have a pilot project that runs 5 years where we're going to do some testing and give people a certification. They do this currently in Ontario, and it's working rather well. Arizona and Utah have tried to do it, and now Michigan is going to join into this. And the problem that we faced is that when people tried to do this in the past, they were subject to being practicing unlawful practice of law. So we need to change the rules as to what constitutes unlawful practice of law. We got to identify people who have the knowledge and skill to enter into very limited areas to help whether it be family law, debt collection, probate and estates, and let them go at it. Make sure that they're properly trained and see if we can't fill this civil justice gap in a way that gives people quality legal advice, but short of giving everybody a lawyer.
Think about it from this standpoint, Weaver, what the judge, if you had, I don't know, did I hear the number of $580 million and we need basically four times that amount to fill the gap? I know I just got the letter from Chief Judge Sean Cox in the federal courthouse, who and I and my firm has ponied up to do the pro bono work and the help there. But when you think about that amount of money that's necessary to fill the gap, I don't know, that sounds like an insanely creative idea, a good idea to bring, you know, the cases that can be handled by, think of some of your paralegals at Plunkett Cooney. Some of them are smarter than, you know, all get out, right?
So it's a win-win too, because if they actually get in and get practical experience like that, they're going to be better when they're helping our clients, you know. And I think that that's just an incredible benefit. That's really a side effect, but it's an outstanding benefit to the law firms that get involved.
Yeah. Yeah. So how do you kick this off the ground? Like, where do you get the watering hole or the pond of where these candidates would be? Where are these people?
That's a great question. So for more than a year, we had a committee, and I was a chair of the commission, and I also chaired the regulatory reform committee. And we had regular meetings, and we brought all the stakeholders together. So we had some lawyers, we had some paralegals, we had people who teach paralegal. Do I still have you, Todd?
Yep, you still have me.
Yep.
I'm sorry.
Yep.
Okay. That's okay. We had social workers who give advice to people in domestic violence situations, but when they get to court, they're told they can't whisper in their client's ear. Mm. You know, we tried to identify the gap and where people can need services, and then talk to educators of paralegals, talk to people who are currently paralegals, people who never had any formal education in being a paralegal, but are in that space, and came together with guidelines. We put the guidelines together and made a recommendation that we put together a pilot project implementation committee. And Carl Hurston from the Honigan firm is going to chair that committee. And we suspect within 12 to 18 months, we'll have the plan up and running. And it'll be a pilot for 4 or 5 years. We'll see what happens. You know, the idea is to do no harm, and we hope to do a lot of good.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Justice Zara, we want to check in with you on a regular basis just to touch base on the big events in the state of Michigan and the Supreme Court, but more importantly, all of those creative ideas that makes our state, you know, we're one of the first of three states in the country to be doing this, and that all the ingenious ideas to make it more effective for everybody in our state. So always, always an honor and a pleasure to talk with you. And you just keep doing the great, great work you're doing.
Michael, Todd, it's my pleasure. Take care. I look forward to
talking
to you.
Great talking to you, Judge.
Great talking with you.
Bye-bye.
We'll be right back. We have Chief Judge Patricia Fizard coming on, and we're going to talk a little bit about the Wayne County Circuit Court and some big happenings that are going on there, and also about the draft day. So we'll be right back with Behind the Bench just after this. Welcome back. We got Weaver from Plunkett Cooney, Mike Weaver, one of the hardest working trial lawyers around the state. But most importantly, we have one of the best judges around the state. We just had Justice Zara, and now we have the chief judge of Wayne County Circuit Court, the busiest court in the state of Michigan, Judge Frizzard. How are you?
Good evening, Mr. Flood. I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good. Just, you know, trying to keep up to the people like Weaver. You know, he has, you know, all these people working for him. I'm like that mouse in the wheel, constantly grinding. So, but I'm doing okay.
Perfect.
Yeah. So, I love checking in with you just to get a pulse of what's going on in our beloved city and county here in Detroit. And I noticed, I know that this is going to be a zoo down here with the draft. And I was curious. I saw some alerts that came out to attorneys, but what is the game plan for you know, the cases that are going to be here during the draft time?
Well, what our court has sent out is information indicating that during the week of April 22nd to April 26th, that all hearings in the Coleman A. Young building have to be held remotely. It can't, with the inability to really park or get anywhere, the courthouse has to be closed. But you could go on the court website, www.3rdcc.org, and they would have all the information about how you can work remotely, how you can get answers to any questions that you have. So the Coleman A. Young building has to be shut down. However, the jury services are working for Frank Murphy Hall of Justice for in-person services all week, except for they're not having new juries on the last 2 days, the busiest days, Thursday and Friday, I think that is.
Right.
But the jurors who are already on a case will continue during that week on at Frank Murphy Hall of Justice and the juvenile hall. So,
well, that's good notice to have out there. Obviously, we have good practice. We you know, we went through the pandemic, so everybody should be able to adhere to that. And for every juror that's out there, you know, leave well in advance if you're coming down for that criminal trial that you're going to have at Frank Murphy. So that's
yeah, exactly, to leave themselves a little bit more time. But they looking online for help on, you know, any special instructions on how to get there and where to park. But, you know, there'll be a lot there won't be in-person filings accepted in the domestic or civil court filings. And the self-help center, by the way, will be operating out of the Lincoln Hall of Justice rather than KMAC. So
Okay. People
can still get self-help center assistance from 9 to 3 Monday through Friday, but they just have to go to a different location that we have on 1025 East Forest Avenue, Detroit, rather than the Coleman A. Young building. But the William Booth Legal Aid Clinic would be canceled for Thursday, April 22nd, because of the NFL draft, and that would be normally at Coleman A. Young.
Gotcha.
So it will be held every other Thursday other than that one, and there's a phone number that they can call if they need Legal Aid Clinic at 313-361-6340, but they can look up this information on the court website. And we're, you know, happy to help in any way we can. And we'll all be working. Some of us are just going to be forced to work remotely, those who work at Coleman A.N.
You know what? You're always working, Judge. I called and earlier around 5 o'clock, and you were still at work. So
right.
Yeah, yeah. So God bless. You're the best, and I really, really appreciate
so
you. Yeah.
Well, we appreciate you and your service to the community and giving out our information, and we're grateful to you. So thanks a lot.
Thanks, Judge. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Judge.
All right, bye-bye.
Take care.
So I gotta ask Mike.
Yes.
You were traveling today. You got some windshield time. What were you? You weren't playing golf. Where were you going?
I was up in Bay City preparing a couple of witnesses for their depositions later this week, and then I took a deposition in Saginaw of a plaintiff in a Fair Labor Standards Act case.
All right.
So, pretty busy day. A lot of construction out there. But I made it to and from safely.
That's all good. So witness prep, it was your witnesses for your cases coming up that they're going to be deposed on. And how long does it take normally, in witness prep for the layperson out there to understand how important this is?
The prep is so vital because the better you can prepare a witness, the better they're going to do in their deposition. And, you know, they only get one shot at testifying under oath in any given case. So you want to make sure that you have a good working knowledge of all the important documents. You want to prep them on the law. And then, you know, there's always some prepping regarding the skills of a witness. You know, there are techniques that are beneficial and some pitfalls that you can warn them about to make sure that they're as good a witness as they can possibly be. And you always tell them to tell the truth.
That's the bottom line. How many times,
yeah.
Right? Always tell the truth. You can't fail.
No.
You know,
exactly.
Keep it there in front of you and always tell the truth. That's the
number. Believe it or not, Todd, I have witnesses lie to me under oath several times a week, as you probably have seen in your practice as well. But, you know, you can catch them with the appropriate documents, but that means the lawyers have to be prepped too, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I just had a hearing, and I won't get into it because it's my case, but I just went through a witness that completely perjured himself on the stand. It was during my cross-examination. So we'll see how that ferrets out. But one of the things that I am constantly explaining to clients and witnesses is you can't fail as long as you keep it in front of you and tell the truth. So the facts,
absolutely.
It's really, really important that you have a good understanding. Don't guess, don't assume, don't, you know, surmise. Do all the things that are normal, but it of just keeping it in front of you is telling the truth and facts. So, do you know Todd Perkins?
I do know Todd Perkins.
You gotta love Todd. He is like a pillar in our world. He does both criminal and civil, like me. He represents just so many different people. Do we have Todd with us? Is he coming on? Oh, I see. So that was our man Link telling us he's coming in a second or two. But Perkins is one of those guys who he no question, put all the time in the beginning of his practice of learning the trade, learning the craft, trying cases and cases and cases, and now he's mentoring but yet representing. And what cracks me up is he can walk on any line and across and shake the hand of another Democrat, Republican, doesn't matter. He has friends on all sides, all places, and it's just one of those unique talents. But I, you know, it's always great to hear him. And he wants to get into some of the issues that I think are really big, not only in the state of Michigan, not only here, but in the criminal law world around the country and what we're doing. So as soon as we get back from this break, we're going to have Todd Perkins come with Mike and I and talk about some heavy stuff with regards to criminal law. We're back. We got one of the great lawyers in our city and our state, Todd Perkins, with this, along with Mike Weaver from Plunkett Cooney. Two amazing gentlemen. I want to bring Todd into the conversation. Not only do I respect him as a lawyer, he's a great friend as well. And Todd and I were speaking on basically, you know, where is criminal law? What's going on in criminal law? What's a big topic in criminal law? And one that's being heavily debated around the country. And I have some reactions to part of it because I know a prosecutor in our state who I respect who attempts to do this, but it delves into the area of restorative justice and what that means and where that goes. And I was just reading not too long ago, Todd sent me over an article from Harvard Law Journal and what inmate had suffered through being in basically solitary confinement for 12 years. Todd, welcome. Thanks for being here, my friend.
Well, thank you for having me, man. I certainly do appreciate your kind words, and you know, as a member of the bar, you really hold the bar to a higher standard, and you know what you're doing now in giving words of wisdom to the general public, you know, it really provides I think a social currency that we all need. So I appreciate you letting me give
God bless,
you words,
baby. Thank you. Likewise, and. And, you know, Weaver, so not many people know this about Weaver, but he someone gets in at 7:30. He says, so you're working Baker hours today? So, you know, Mike's in there, but, Mike, you may not realize this about Perkins. I remember a day I was coming into Frank Murphy and, Perkins would be at the UAD or Wayne State Law School library until, you know, they shut it down, and then he would be someplace else until, you know, he got kicked out and be coming in. I mean, perpetual worker. So talk to
just
us a little bit.
Outside.
Yeah, well, you know, when you care, that's what we want in any field, right? Whether you're digging ditches or a brain surgeon or whatever the case you are, you know, as long you care about your profession, and both of you do. So, Todd, talk to us a little bit about restorative justice and to the layperson, what, you know, this has a big impact. I'm not for it on some levels. I'm totally for it in other levels. So talk to us a little bit about what you see going forward and what's happening in this current climate that we see.
Well, okay, so restorative justice, it's a concept. I think that, you know, the United States is probably later to the party than other countries. But, you know, it is, I'll say out some terms and, you know, to the best possible, you and I and Mike
sure.
can really explain it to your listening audience. But, you know, you think about restorative justice are things like drug court, veterans court, diversion, and work programs. And all of those things are, you know, we can get into the minutia and the details of each one of them, but all of those things are people who are met with being charged with criminal cases, and prosecutors in various different counties using those tools, those programs to, you know, identify someone who is either, sometimes you have people who are in the system because they're drug addicted. And, you know, you'll oftentimes see people who are drug addicted charged with theft offenses, you know, minor
right.
theft offenses. And, you know, you're looking to what's the restorative way that we want to help this person rather than simply just throwing them up and locking the key away. We know that that doesn't work in and of itself. Now, like you said, Todd, there is some people who the key's got to be locked and, you know, just leave them where they're at.
Right.
But for, I think the gravamen of charges, the, you know, the predominant amount of charges, there are ways that we can help people out, because what happens, you know, if people get a felony, it's almost like having the scarlet letter on your chest
right.
or on your forehead, you know, and you can never work in a particular industry again. You can never get a certain amount of income. So society is impaled with that person's inability to feed himself or his family or her family, and left in a theoretical way to return back to the things that got them in the criminal justice system again.
Exactly.
So restorative, I don't want it to seem like, I think you and I were talking a little bit about Portland, how mm-hmm. wanted to have drug zones, so to speak. And, you know, I think that gets into the hairy issues of whether or not that's going to work, that's going to succeed. Because Portland is really returning back to removing that idea that that's going to be something that they can, pull off, so to speak. And, those are the areas where we're still learning, but I applaud them for trying something, because we're trying to figure this out, because, just simply punishing wrongdoers,
Think about all the exceptions to the rule, right? I say knowing the rules is the training, knowing the exception is the experience. Think about all the times, and someday I'm going to have to get Judge Khalil from Redford on, and she runs an amazing veterans court. And think about it. I brought Weaver into his first murder trial. I won't get into the names, but the PTSD and the drugs the fact of the matter is, like you said, that scarlet letter, Todd, where you, one offense, right, can disrupt a family and make it catastrophic, when you know that there is a better way to go around and save this this person, if it's a theft or a narcotic offense, and you can get them into a place where they don't cost not only themselves, cost their families, but cost everybody else. We got to have some proactive steps and measures put in place to make it so that we are helping society, as opposed to, I guess, be remedial to me. Remedial in the sense that we're not solving problems. We're not solving issues. We're in fact creating more. And
Todd Perkins. Yeah. Todd Perkins. They changed the laws on expungement a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And I worked at a free clinic to assist people with expungement. Is that something that we consider restorative justice? Because, absolutely. Any person could make a mistake, and if you can clean it up, it seems to be getting people back on the right path, I hope.
Oh, absolutely. These free clinics, like Mike Duggan has one in the city of Detroit, Clean Slate, I should say Mayor Mike Duggan has one in the city of Detroit. A lot of the cities do have a Clean Slate, but this Clean Slate in the city of Detroit, I see their outreach into various different counties. And, Christina Gerges is, I think, leading that program, a former Wayne County prosecutor who is, it's interesting. You have these prosecutors who are now seeing, looking at a bigger picture of trying to help. But absolutely, as expungements are restorative justice, because we went from years ago when we first started, Todd and I, and you too, we only could expunge one felony conviction.
Yeah.
Now you can expunge in a certain family of cases, you can expunge up to three felony convictions and multitude of misdemeanors, which, if someone has, you think about it, the theory is if a person's been crime free for 7 or 10 years, then, the likelihood of them returning is less. So let's get them back on track. Let's get them back to being regular citizens. Let's get them back to being able to make an application at a bank, to work, places that's bonded or something like that. But I don't want to leave this conversation. I know we don't have a lot of time, because I think this is, I'm so happy you guys, reached out to me about this idea. But Todd, you said something I fought myself for not bringing it up when I started off these things, but you said something about mental health. You didn't say those words, but you were talking about PTSD.
Right.
That's a huge, huge thing that we're no longer looking at people with mental health diseases and mental health issues in such a negative, jaundiced light.
I promise you the next time we're on, We're going to have the three of us with Judge Kim Worthy, and this is a big topic for her. I talked to the mayor, Mayor Mike Duggan. It's a big topic for him. They embrace it. He embraces it. And getting people jobs and making them contributors to their own lives, the health for them is what we need to be focusing in on. So
you just told yourself, Todd, about your age. You just said Judge Kim Worthy.
Yeah, that's right, right.
You've been fun to start.
I know. I am old. So, well, I love you both. Thanks
love
for being
too,
here.
Man.
And we'll be back next time with Behind the Bench and Flood Law.